One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I should ask the important question. Who's your favourite background extra? Because mine is the ginger guy with the hat and the tattoos.
Oh, yeah. He's the barman. He steals every scene. He's
Oh, Tyson Fury, who can't wink. Mine is coming much later in the poker game, and it's the guy in the purple shirt and the white tie.
I'd like you to tell me about that, because you mentioned
when we get there. We're several hours away in conversation.
I really, really like most of the people that you see kind of being having their hands shaked by him. You know, there's like a 45 second long bit where he says, "Thanks, guys. It's good to have you back again. Thanks, lads." And you're like, we just absolutely did not need to have this mic'd up for dialogue. They just look like people who've been bussed in that day. Everyone is just nervous, as if they're like, it had the energy of when like Noel and Noel's house party, or like Graham Norton would go into the crowd and would do a bit of crowd work, and other people just hoping against hope that he wouldn't come near them. It had that frisson of like, oh god, I don't want to be involved. I just want to get here for, I just want the really good lunch, and I want to be, you know, having cocktails by the piano. I didn't expect to actually be in this film.
Here's the other question: do we think that everyone in the background is in his one of his River Dance troops? Because he's got so many.
I thought a lot of maybe dances in there. I thought maybe financiers.
That's an
old sort of Dino De Laurentiis kind of thing, where he would put loads of people who he owed money to in the movie, because everyone they'd all want to be, oh, you're the dignitary in this scene set in the parliament, or you're the fancy man at this party. And people were like, oh, and can my son-in-law who be in it as well? They're like, yep, he can come in, give us some money.
Does he have a suit?
Exactly. So those kinds of people love to be adjacent to Hollywood.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah,
But I have nothing to prove that, but that is my theory, is that every single person there is some like rich dentist from Miami, who's given $100,000 to Dance Lord Productions.
Having said that, though, he is a multi millionaire. We know he funded this whole thing himself, right? Which, to be fair, I was thinking about, I wouldn't be in it and make it a bad film. But if I had $300 million in the bank, $3 million on a film seems like that you really want to make.
Is that the official budget?
Yeah, because I couldn't find any details in the budget.
I was hunting around.
$3 million apparently, and it's all come from him, because as he put it, he didn't have time to get the money together. He had a window in which to make it. He could have got money from elsewhere, but
you didn't have the time. So like, or what? Like, we wouldn't have seen this film.
He had a window in which he wanted to make it, apparently.
Okay. And after that, he wouldn't have wanted to make
it. There's a Variety and a Hollywood Reporter article on it, but unbelievably.
It's like he's having a conversation with himself. Well, I've got a window. Well, we'll have to be quick. Yeah, you're right.
No, we can skip through this part quite kind of handily, because I have seen some scurrilous rumour, and rumour it is, about maybe it being some form of financial tax dodgy kind of a thing, or at least its release and shuttering and coming back from being shuttered to being released, that there was something about how he stood to basically get some sort of windfall or something. And
oh, nice.
I have viewed it from that that lens, and it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Don't know. I think there's so much love in this. I think if only him for himself, which is a pure love. I think he, hand on heart, wanted to make this film. I think distribution-wise, there's
The only thing that would have made it more perfect is if he sang a song at the end credits.
I think there should have been I think there should have been a fancy sort of motion graphics bedecked Bond style opening, which had like little death discs falling like confetti from underwater, or like, you know, beautiful girls in plunging V-neck, like swimming through waters that then turn into whiskey
or fire, you know,
tilted hats.
Absolutely,
and fire. Yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to go through the movie and try and pick out what those things would be that would just show up like covered in oil or emerging in the shape of a gun. But I don't think it would be too hard, because maybe you'd have like the world's most boring poker game represented.
Oh my God.
The poker game as a sort of battle of wills here is, it is literally written by someone who once heard someone talk about a poker game.
Yeah.
And that is,
he watched a bit of Late Night Texas Hold'em because he likes Jennifer Tilly, and that was
he's watched Casino Royale while drunk, and he can't remember any of it, so he's just going, oh, people like cards, I guess.
Well, I mean, are we able to talk about that part yet? Because we haven't really set up Eric Roberts.
Well, I was just about to say, because Nick, bless him, he doesn't like Eric Roberts at all. He's done some research on him, and he said that he's a part of the Crusading Revolution, a collection of war criminals, and Eric Roberts is there to sell arms to them, and there's also a formula that could be put into the war supply and kill thousands, ridding the world of the so-called undesirables.
And then, to which I believe Michael Flatley says... Yeah. Something like, and what's the point?
Mm. What's like, your point?
He's just given an unbelievably clear...
What's your
clear...
point, Nick?
Yeah, so...
I think it was quite clear.
Millions of people are going to die because of this.
He just read, he read you a
evil on it.
He read you a paragraph from the Wikipedia synopsis for the plot of this film.
Which, by the way, is a sentence. Usually when we do films on here, I say we, me... I basically get the bones of the plot from Wikipedia and then build my notes around it. This was a fucking sentence.
Yeah.
Really? And what was that sentence?
Oh, I'll tell you. I'll tell you.
We feared you, I'm dead.
It says, okay, it says, secret agent Blackbird retires and opens a nightclub in the Caribbean to escape his past. A former lover comes to meet him and brings trouble with her.
I mean, yeah, pretty good. Yeah,
it's succinct. Mm. Imagine pitching that.
And a disc of evil with her.
Yeah. Well, can I ask, when we're on, while we're on the death pog, what is your understanding of what that pog actually contains?
I thought because it contains ingredients to a formula. That he said that. No, he explained it because he says it's a thing that you drink and it can fix all of your insides.
Yeah,
it can improve immune. It's something about immune systems.
Yeah.
Like it's the formula for something that can improve your immune system. Just think, no more pain and disease.
There you go.
In the world.
And then he goes, oh, but these people have like turned it backwards.
Yeah.
So it will suck all your life out of you. And they're going to put it in the water supply.
Yeah, because if you drink it, you get better. But if you stick it up your arse. Then you die, which is quite similar to a lot of drinks, I'd imagine.
I'd imagine it is. Dr. Yeah. Pepper.
But like, do you know what's amazing is what struck me at the time, and I've just forgotten every time because by the time the movie ends, my brain has been wiped.
Mm.
But a completely buried lead in this entire film is that the formula is not just this thing they have to get out of the hands because it's so bad. They literally have a cure for all disease.
Yeah.
And that news to them is so secondary that it's mentioned just then and it's never mentioned again, that every single one of them is going to live forever and that all sort of hardship, suffering and pain is gone forever because they hold both formulas, presumably. They've got the good one and the bad one.
They've only got the top medical scientists to believe.
Oh,
that speech that he gives is beautiful, where he's just explaining, well, one of the top medical scientists has told us that actually it'll cure all diseases to human beings. What's that got to do with me, Nick?
What's your point, Nick?
What's your point, Nick? Like, I feel bad every time I do the accent. I'm sorry.
Like, that's all right. Ian Beattie.
Bristolian?
I think you can. I mean, I think because Kaz is English. Obviously, Michael Flatley is doing his usual Irish-American, American-Irish thing, which is very strange. Well, first of all, by the way, we haven't even talked. Why was there a slightly Irish-coded faction within MI6 in the first place?
Sure.
What was their job?
The chieftains are the...
They're kind of like, they're like an Irish away team of the MI6 who do like desert and like sort of jungle ops.
We know they
even
do
though
jungle.
They're in their 60s.
Yeah. They are sent to investigate the ends of rainbows.
Yes. John.
Sorry.
No, John.
We're going to the end of the rainbow. What's your point, Nick?
John, for the last time, it's an optical illusion.
Sorry.
And that's what we tell all the English people while we build our houses in the Bahamas from our gold that we find.
He says to Nick that it's none of our business. We're not the men we used to be.
Yeah.
And that life just ruined everything. Bit of a flashback.
We get a flashback to him sort of shouting at the sky, going, why? In a jungle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, there's an amazing close up on a big wobbly face by him.
Yeah,
which it's because it's flashed a few times, sort of like in kind of disconnected scenes where you see him looking away to the distance early on, and then you see a brief flash, and then later on he says, you know, he makes some comment or reference to it, and it's flashed again. Like you can see that's what he's thinking about.
Yeah.
And every time it came up, it was like Mardi Gras in that cinema. People were taking their tops off. It was like unbelievable. And then he's in there like. He's in there like covert ops Fonzie. He's wearing this unbelievably bulky leather jacket, completely unexplained. Like, I presume there's just loads of footage from that operation that they didn't. I mean, this movie is, what, like 14 minutes long?
Yeah.
So I've got to imagine they didn't go to all that trouble. He must have been on a motorbike at some point or something, because he literally, it's where he looks like... I don't know, my dad dressed like the Fonz. Like, it's so
he looks like
strange.
That Father Ted episode where they're all Elvis.
Yeah, he does. And like, we're to believe that this was the operation that killed the lady that the funeral was for.
Yeah.
So by that
10 years ago, yeah.
So 10 years ago. So at that point, he's, let's say, mid-50s. You know, so very, very strange. His whole role in it, in the flashback, seems to be he gets there just in time to see her being burned alive. Insert, I don't know, cartel people or fart gorillas or something, just bad guys, Inc.
Yeah.
Never explained who they are or if they have any connection to anything else in the film. I don't think they do.
No. I was expecting, because we keep getting fed these little flashbacks. I was expecting at the end it would be like, as the flames go up, you see Eric Roberts smiling. No.
That would have actually been kind of a, I would have backed that as a little punch up note.
Yeah.
So, but to Eric Roberts, by the way, who we've barely spoken about.
Oh, yeah.
So they say all this about we have to interrupt their plans. He's talked around in a way that kind of, doesn't seem like it was there for anything other than we need an extra 4.5 minutes in this film. So for some reason, I don't want to do this, but by the end of the conversation, he does want to do it. And there is that the point
called,
where
it's called resisting the call.
Well, what we've got next.
He's obviously read The Hero's Journey. It's resisting the call.
We've just had the next part of the Joseph Campbell journey, which is to have two hats in the same scene, as you mentioned earlier. And he says,
a man must wear many hats.
That's right. And he says to Nick, We're not doing this, and if you don't like it, you can get out.
He does
get
say
off
that.
My island.
Yeah,
yeah. He does say that, the American Michael Flatley.
Welcome to Blackbird Park. But Vivian jumps in the car because she's not happy with Eric Roberts, because he basically said to her, "You know, tomorrow I'm going to go and have this meeting," and she was like, "Oh, I thought we were going to spend some nice time together." And he slams his fist down on the table.
He throws a handful of money in her face.
Yeah,
even then, the dynamics of that are so hilarious because you've got a guy who is, objectively, he's like a mass murdering war criminal type guy masquerading as like this philanthropist. He's a bad guy in like 400 usable ways. Mm. But the breaking point for ostensibly our female love interest lead character, the breaking point from this horrible man is that he doesn't spend enough time with me, and he makes me go and do shopping with my bodyguard there. It's such a unbelievably unfocused and sexist idea of what would drive a sentient woman away from a mass murdering psychopath.
Yeah.
It's only because he's not paying enough attention to me.
And again, it's got shades of License to Kill. Like maybe he's watched that at some point and gone, oh, I'll use that dynamic. But it's never really, as you say, it doesn't really go anywhere.
No.
Is this where he has the world's smallest laptop as well?
Yeah, it's like it's got metal plating all over it, like the one, yeah. Like your one your work would give you if you were going on a sort of paintballing weekend or something.
He does do some great phone acting, though. I was really into that.
Again, yeah. No mobiles. It's all landlines.
Yeah, and he's talking, and he's pretty good. Like, I mean, Eric Roberts, you know, does a lot of these films. In writing the review that I did for The Examiner, I just looked up his IMDb.
It's insane.
He has 220 films that are either still in work, were presumably abandoned, or are scheduled for release in the next 5 years. The 200 films. The guy, he can probably afford every building in this movie.
Buy and sell the Blue Moon.
Is he pulling down 20, 30 films a year? Like he's in
something like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does a lot of voice work as well. Like he did that film, A Talking Cat.
A Talking Cat, is that what it's called?
It's called A Talking Cat, A Talking Cat. And it's him doing the voice, but he's clearly drunk. Clearly drunk.
I'd say he's had a few in this film as well.
Yeah, I think he had a bit relaxed of a problem for a while. But in A Talking Cat, he's like...
So how did that Snakes on a Plane-ass movie title go past like the draft stage?
Yeah.
A Talking Cat?
Talking Cat.
Yeah. I've never heard of that movie, but then that's the same.
Yeah, it's in Quizabang. It's a question mark, exclamation mark.
I went through his IMDb because I was so fascinated with it. I exported it all into a spreadsheet. He has,
here we go.
He has played, he's made so many movies. He's played 14 people named John alone.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, because that's how, if you've literally been in 500 films, you will have played more people named John than like Daniel Day-Lewis has ever played any role. You know, because you're literally, you've played, you know, every single name, and you know, that's, it's just something for you to know, John, as a fellow John, that he's out-Johned you.
He might have played times. Me.
He might have done. Yeah. John Rain would be a great character name for a sort of a Eric Roberts character, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's already Barry Eisler has a series of novels where the hero is called John Rain.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. My double namer is a guy called Seamus O'Reilly, spelled differently. His is spelled Seamus O'Reilly, and he is a gay porn star from Nashville, and nice. He occasionally gets my emails.
Oh,
and yeah, we have to sort of meet at the gates. And
is that why you did ketamine?
Yeah,
you got mixed up.
No, I mean that was prior to the assumption. But what was interesting was the first time I contacted him, he was really really nice to me. And I think I soured things because I just said, by the way, can I just say it's amazing that you're a porn star and you kept the name Seamus O'Reilly, because my name is Seamus O'Reilly and I never thought I would make it as a porn star with such a boring name. It's a bit bacon and cabbage. I thought I had to take like my mother's maiden name and my pet's name or something like that.
That's right.
And he replied very curtly, that's not how everyone gets their names.
Seamus.
I was just trying to make friends. The internet says it is. So you're wrong.
I was trying to make friends on the internet, so it didn't work out. But yeah.
Out of interest, what would be your porn name then in that respect?
It would be Elmo McGullion, which is...
Wow.
Yeah, my mum was a wonderful, lovely, amazing woman. McGullion is one of the least sexy Irish names ever. My friend Jack has got the best one, I think, which is Midnight Byrne.
Oh, nice.
Because his first cat was called Midnight and his mother's maiden name is Byrne. B-Y-R-N-E. But he could probably change it for effect. Why, what would yours be?
Mine was Fluffy Cropper.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad.
Sarah?
No, I was going to say, I have my namesake is a Christmas-themed romance author, Sarah Morgan. So, yeah. What is my... I don't know what my porn name is. Sarah, yeah. But do look up the work of the Christmas-themed romance author, Sarah Morgan. She clearly makes a lot more money than I do.
Do you support your double name? Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Do you ever meet up and just exchange it?
I have been asked if I would write a blurb for books before, and I know they weren't trying to get to me, but I have wanted to write the blurb. It's like the cupcake mistletoe mystery. And I really want to blurb those books.
Oh my God.
Best fucking book I've ever read.
You have to do it at least once.
So Eric Roberts, we've got a scene here, because obviously Flatley's thought, we've got to show this guy means fucking business. So he's on his boat, and he's got a banker on his boat who's got 2 minutes to crack some bank thing, which is very vague. He does it, and then as he's doing it, Eric Roberts walks around the boat and says, we got the sea, we got booze, we got sexy women.
Oh, his delivery of sexy wonderful. Women is unbelievable. It should put him directly on a register. Mm-hmm. He says, sexy woman. And then he goes, so he gets very, very inappropriately close to this guy as he's working. And like, on a purely mundane level, I hate that if I'm doing something for someone and like they're right, I'm like, literally leave the room for 5 minutes and I'll do it for you.
Yeah.
But like, he can't really do that. He is a big, scary man. Mm. So he does it, and then he kind of complains because he says, I don't have that money for you, whatever. And so Eric Roberts kind of pushes him off kind of playfully, but not killing him, but just being like, you know who's boss. And then out of nowhere, this like boat attendant comes up and says, hey, you can't do that. And then you went from cracking codes to cracking necks. Because Quan, a very large man who has been his kind of bodyguard kind of guy, just absolutely snaps his neck with, I swear to God, comic timing that is, if it were deliberate, it would be truly sensational. Like, watching it again, I was like, that fits such immaculate comic timing for a spoof because you do not expect it. And the hand comes out from the screen. You can't see Quan. You just see him do it so quickly and so callously. And then I think, does Eric Roberts say good job or nice one or something? He says something really callous and strange.
As this corpse floats away in the water and the banker's next to it going, what? And I'm sitting there going, what is going on? This is like something you'd expect between sex scenes in a porn film.
Yeah, and it has that sort of, if the Fast Show was doing, you know, the Fast Show used to do like spiffs of like, you know, a right royal cockney barla monkeys.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it felt like. Yeah. And to its credit, like, it was breezy. Like, I would have watched the whole movie with Eric Roberts being like that.
Yeah.
With a different antagonist, with Eric Roberts as the hero. And you're just like, yeah, he's a prick, but I find him watchable. I really genuinely do find him watchable because he's not pretending to be anything he's not.
He's strangely compelling, isn't he? He's strangely compelling. The work in. Yeah.
He is. And it's just that old money confidence that he has. He's just like, yeah, this is what I do. I'm getting paid, you know, yacht money to make this for 4 days.
Oh, that's his yacht. He came to set with that yacht.
then I'm going to, and he brought the sexy woman. And he goes to Bulgaria 2 days later and he makes another movie called something like Death Ops, Covert 15. And, you know, that's what a life.
You'll go and make a film with Steven Seagal where Steven Seagal sits down all the way through it.
Slapping people from a sitting position.
That's right. So we cut from there to Flatley and Vivian walking on the beach together. And there's one point here where he stops and stands and puts his hand on his hip like a kind of I'm free thing, which is a bit strange. But she talks about how she's been with Blake for 5 years, which is Eric Roberts. And they met on a mission. She was just supposed to spy on him, but they got close.
Which also puts a lie to the idea that she didn't know what he was doing.
Exactly.
Because what was she spying on? He wasn't working in a bakery, was he?
No.
He was dealing arms to people. And their entire relationship in the movie is, it's kind of like, we met 3 weeks ago and that's why I don't seem to know who you are. You don't seem to know who I am. And you don't like my job. Well, then you just need to know that I need to do certain things in this. That's the conversation you'd be having like 3 weeks into a relationship with an arms dealer.
Yeah.
Not 5 years and you're engaged.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
But then he tells her that he'll always regret the death of his ex. And says, I'm never going to get past it. And she says, well, perhaps it's time you did.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty smooth move from her.
Mm.
Like, she arrived there engaged to a guy. And then she somehow, I don't know. I think they both have gotten over, you know, long-standing commitments in about 19 seconds.
Yeah.
To be fair, he is dressed as a tiny child in this scene, so you can see why she would have her head turned.
This is what you were talking about earlier with the three-quarter-length trousers.
Yeah, he's got his trousers rolled up. He's wearing a child's school shirt.
Yeah.
just rolled up very tight around the biceps that aren't really bicep-y.
No.
A very low-cut deep V.
And he does
do
that.
Pepperami. He's beautiful. He is. He's magnificent. He's carrying his moccasins in his hand.
Yeah.
He's sports casual. Mm. I mean, you can't help but go Partridge when you talk about this film, but no. It's... yeah.
So then he drops her off at the hotel, and then Nick comes out again like a madman. He grabs her and says, "You're not safe. You used to stop bad guys, not marry them."
he says, "We used to stop bad guys, not marry them," which just that tiny grammatical change makes his point so much more illegible, because you're like, so was that an option that you all had, that you were all going to marry the arms dealers? Like, you had to resist the urge to like marry Osama bin Laden or like, I don't know, Pablo Escobar or whoever it is you're fighting in the jungle. Like, it's just... it's like first draft stuff that I just love, and which if they sawed off those edges, the film wouldn't be nearly as compelling because there's so many strange choices in what everybody says. And he then, is he kind of excommunicated then after that, and he goes off and
cries?
Well,
yeah, because they have kind of a hat off because they're both wearing hats at this point.
And Nick's hat is floppy.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor, yeah.
Exactly.
His hat
is
drooping, whereas Flatley's is stiff and sturdy and rakish.
You know what makes no sense about Nick's character is that in any normal script, this argument would then lead to Nick dying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it doesn't
happen. Yeah, instead, who dies?
Well,
are we there yet?
Not yet.
Okay, sorry, Dad.
He's told to get out. So then Vivian goes back to the hotel room and has a look through Eric Roberts' things. And she finds the pog.
Yeah.
And death pog.
Your death pog. And you think he's caught her, but he hasn't. And he just apologises and says that she needs to be nice to the bodyguard. And now, suddenly out of nowhere, she's like, well, I don't like Eric Roberts anymore.
Yeah. And
it's
then
the amazing... Oh, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, it does also look as if she puts the pog back, but she hasn't.
No.
It's very, very confusing blocking of this scene.
Yeah.
Where you're not sure, because it would make sense for him to catch her in the act and in that sort of, you know, I know what you're doing even before you're going to do a thing. And then when he doesn't, you're like, okay, so she makes up a lie that she needs to go and get some water.
That's my favourite line of this scene.
I need to get
in
some water.
Room.
No, I'll go down myself. And
these taps don't work.
And not only that, but his revelation that she is cheating on him, that she's working against him at least, and is kind of like turned, is that he gets out of the shower, and most dramatic shot of all time, the Hitchcock shot, is the Stanley Kubrick shot, is he looks at the bedside table and sees there was always water there. And
it's
that's
so
from that point we are to believe, you know, in hindsight, having watched this movie three times, that's the point at which he's like, well, I'm probably gonna have to use her as like live bait to draw this guy out in a deadly game of cat and mouse. She is dead to me, she has betrayed me, all for a glass of water.
Yeah. I like to think that when you get that close up of the water, it's like it cut to that everyone throwing their pints up in the air. In like celebration of cinema.
The Game of Thrones thing.
Yeah. Or Scorsese just going, this is cinema.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, not a superhero in sight.
No. So talking of which, she goes to see Flatley and says, Nick was right. He's got the... I've been living with a liar and a murderer for 5 years. And I've just noticed.
What did she think he did? Like, come on.
Is this like a true lie situation?
Yeah, oh, possibly, yeah, because he was like building hospitals and stuff, but that was all just cover for selling death discs.
Yeah.
That she just didn't know about.
Death spokey dokies. Flatley tells her he doesn't want, I don't want to get involved, I'm not the man I used to be. And they kiss, and then he's sort of on-off girlfriend sees and then goes and tells Eric Roberts.
The femme fatale chanteuse who took her robe off in the previous scene.
That's a
she's
very...
got college in the morning, so she's you know, she's a bit grumpy.
She's got her A-levels in the morning. Yeah.
So after they've had a kiss, he's like, yeah, all right, I'll help then. So he goes to see Matiti and says, make a copy of the coin, you know what to do.
I love that he says, this is the thing you need to do. Yeah. You know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, this is my favourite bit coming up. I have to ask you both about this. So Vivian goes back to see Eric Roberts and he's not happy. And he says to her, do you think I'm a bad guy or am I just and then it cuts. I'm like, do you mean, do you want to do that line really again? Do you mean, am I just, as in, am I a just man? Or was he going to say, or am I just something else to you? But no, it just cuts on that.
He absolutely was supposed to, in the script, I believe, say, or am I just?
Mm.
But he, just from maybe having like the lines in his head in a weird way,
yeah,
he just, it came out that way because maybe that's the formulation of the sentence that your brain would automatically go to. And in any other film, you'd be like, oh, sorry, no, I scrubbed that. Let me do that one more time. But in this one, he's like, I have to be in Bulgaria in 4.5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I'd also like to remind the team who was directing this scene, yeah, and he was, yeah, very confused as to why he wasn't in the scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
But surely I should be in every scene. You can't be in this scene.
Can I not just be at the window looking in? No. It ruins the tension.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'd also like to remind the team who was directing this scene,
yeah,
and he was,
yeah,
very confused as to why he wasn't in the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But surely I should be in every scene. You can't be in this scene.
Can I not just be at the window looking in? No. It ruins the tension. So Eric Roberts introduced himself to Flatley, and he wants the Pog back. So they play the most boring game of poker in the world. Yeah. And Eric Roberts looks a bit like Jeffrey from Rainbow in this scene. Like towards the end of his time, where he was going a bit grey.
Oh. Well, they have this amazing back and forth where he's I don't know what you prefer or what you love more, money, women, or playing God. And it's so like it's bumwink central because that's... you're so aware that he has written these words that he has set this up as his big actor's moment, his future award-winning actor's moment.
I'd say though that's the third part of the trilogy of great lines he says here. So the first one is, who I am is none of your concern, what I do is out of your control.
Oh yeah.
And then he says, I heard they call you the Blackbird. He says, the Blackbird is dead. Beautiful.
But also,
and then he goes, oh, your fiance's death caused you to retire. Oh, have I said something to upset you? He's like, no, that's literally a fact. That's not upsetting me. That's what happened.
You just recanted the plot for us. You seem sad from your fiance dying. Then you opened a hotel. Then you bought some hats. Then you went for a drive. Oh, I'm
now
sorry.
You've
touched
it.
A nerve.
Those are the five stages of grief, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah. It's denial. Casino, hat, acceptance.
So then Flatley wins the card game.
Well, can we talk, please, just talk my very briefly,
oh, yeah,
my favourite extra
please,
in the whole thing.
Because I didn't
thing.
Notice this.
No, because, well, this is the thing. What's amazing is you either notice this guy or you don't. And once you've seen it, it's all you can think about for the rest of your life.
I had not spotted this until you mentioned it earlier, and it was on my third viewing.
Oh my God, guys, I'm sorry, I've just blown the doors off. This is, there's a man, and the thing is, it doesn't sound like a lot, and it won't be a lot until you watch it, but there's a man in one of the extras in the background. They're all in their beautiful finery, as you would wear in a casino in a hotel, except for the bartender who looks like Tyson Fury. They're all gathered around, everyone's watching the card game because it's such an exciting card game. Everyone's got aces, haven't they? It's one of those ones where you push cards across the table, money across the table.
It's literally the poker equivalent of I went to Harvard and got an A.
Yes. I did Harvard for police.
Yeah.
It's from the Lego movie. Lego Batman. Sorry. Anyway, there's a guy in the background who is wearing a purple shirt and a white tie. And he has made some choices, and no one has called him on those choices. And he's having a bit of... Either he's having a bit of fun, but something's happening. His tie grows every time you cut back to Flatley.
Oh, God.
And once you see it...
At one point, it's like 14 feet long.
By his knees.
It's unbelievable. It's genuinely going down way past his crotch anyway. Like, it's mesmerizing.
It's like you can't even buy ties that long. He must have sewn two ties together. Whether it's a prank, whether it's a commentary on something.
He's Back to the Future 3'd it with Jules and Verne at the end. Oh, God. Okay. So, you know, at the end of Back to the Future 3, when the Doc turns up in the rocket train.
Oh, the little thing in the background that made it into the finished film.
Yeah, one of the kids gestures to the camera to say, come and have a look at this. And then points at his cock.
Oh, I think I know what it was. I think the standard explanation for it was that kid was motioning to his parents, who were there on set, that he needed to go to the toilet.
Ah.
And that was their code for it, was he just like points as we were. Kind of
okay, well, they left it in the film.
They left it in the film. Yeah. Isn't there a bit in Teen Wolf as well where someone gets their willy out?
Someone gets their knob out, The celebrations at the end of the basketball game.
No, that I would have loved to have seen someone do at this poker game. Just like a little bit of like meat and two veg, kind of like just slowly poking out somewhere. But no, they were cowards and they just had a big long tie.
Big long white tie.
I will go back and watch that after this because I need to see it.
Yeah.
So Matiti is dead.
Yes.
R.I.P. Matiti.
I mean, and then that caps off even more how weirdly his character was treated, was conceived. Just very strange. Killed by Kwan, the aforementioned very big guy who snaps boat attendants' necks.
Yep.
And watches vaguely sinisterly as the sort of lead lady, Vivian, is like sunning herself on the beach. Mm. And then he's killed Matiti. And do we go straight then to the confrontation with...
We get Blackburn! and it's a very drunk Paul McCartney doing an encore. No. it's a Kwan runs in. And, of course, any of us would just cower at this giant man coming in. But the Blackbird, he don't play that game.
Yeah.
He knocks him out and kills him.
He does
it very handily. But is it the only bit of actual on-screen... action that he does, because the other bit is kind of behind shipping containers later on.
Yeah,
and there's obviously the flashback is him very much failing to stop someone being burned alive. That is the action in the entire movie, as far as Michael Flatley is concerned.
What he should have done is gone up to the corpse of his wife and just like nudged it with his elbow, hey, and she came back to life. That'd be perfect.
My favorite bit of that is where he's deadened this guy to like half past dead, and then. Tyson Fury, barman extraordinaire, goes over and checks his pulse.
Yeah.
It's like there's like a lasagna's worth of blood that's like seeping out of this man, the back of this man's head.
But he also he just does the shake of the head. No, we've lost. You know, he doesn't say.
He's
anything.
A doctor as well. He's got a rich backstory. That character, that bartender. And
he's my favorite.
And then he grabs a bottle of like Jack Daniels or something, and then the next scene is. Truly an unbelievable choice where he has been so driven so mad with, I guess, grief and shame that he's
killing a man with one punch,
pulled back into this world.
He, in the middle of what amounts to basically a kind of a hostage situation with this woman, he takes a 3 or 4 hour break to go on the beach and have a bender privately.
Yeah.
Which, and then just comes right back and the film continues.
Yeah, he wakes up the next morning on the beach.
Yeah. Like, just, you know, don't mind us, Michael. Yep. Just wait it out. Just see what tomorrow brings with that whole hostage situation.
Imagine walking in for the late night buffet at the Blue go, is Blackbird about at all? No, he's got. Why is there a dead guy on the floor?
Why are there two dead guys on the one floor? Yeah. Like, and he's just like, yeah, everyone else, I'll leave them to clean it up. I've got some serious drinking
trouble
to do.
Matiti
on the beach.
Was the maid, so yeah, this is going to get sorted out.
Oh god!
If you go to the next room, there is Baps.
Yeah.
So Flatley arrives at the meeting with Eric Roberts and all his buyers, and they've got Vivian, and he's like, "Well, give us what we want, or we'll kill this woman who I've been with for 5 years and is my fiancée." It's like, surely you've got more skin in the game about caring if she dies than me, to be honest.
Yeah, where is the leverage pointed? Like, what are you talking about? And also, I have to go back to the fact that she has been there, presumably, for like 9 hours.
Just waiting. Where is he? Someone said he went to the beach
to
and got
church.
Drunk and went to sleep. Oh, God.
He stopped off at the church on the way.
Have we missed the church? I can't believe, which is actually the
Forgive
single
me,
best
Father,
night.
For I have sinned. Mm. Guys.
I'm about to sin again.
Gorgeous. Oh. Thank you.
You'd be like, not with me, right? No. Yeah.
Sounds like he's going to get his cock out in a confession booth. like stuff it through the little hole.
Bless this, Father.
But like the whole... Like, talk about an aspect of the film that's just like the entire film is held together with blue tack. But then on top of that, you've got like some white tack you've attached to this priest character where it's just literally I've seen in films that sometimes in the hackiest films of all time, the tortured anti-hero will have a conversation with the priest. And maybe I can do that in my film. Mm. And that was the end of the thought process. Mm-hmm. By the time he'd finished having the thought, he looked down at his hands and he'd already written the scene. Yeah. And that was it. And it's just so incredible to watch this and know that he meant it.
But again,
this
it's
is
so
for real.
Marenghi. There's bits where he goes to see the padre in that, which is exactly like this scene.
He's doing things which were already spoofed like so roundly that they only actually make sense as pastiche, which makes it even funnier because you get the sense he's only seen like 9 films, but he really wanted to go through the long, laborious process of making a film that was like maybe 5 of those films. It's just baffling and amazing.
But so heartfelt, like really heartfelt. Yeah.
Can I run 10 words by you?
Please do.
Don't worry about me, son. I'm firing on all cylinders.
Can you remind our listeners what that is referring to?
That was when he turns up at the junkyard, Eric Roberts says, are you looking in bad shape or something?
You've drunk an entire bottle of Jack Daniels and slept on a beach, which at that age, just alone sleeping on the beach is going to...
And him calling Eric Roberts son as well.
I'm all right. He went to church, told the priest he's going to kill this man.
Yeah, In this scene on the beach, you've got Michael Flatley and Nick, and then you've also got sort of henchmen R us kind of characters.
Yeah, some random henchmen.
There's a point at which he's taken away, he says, let the girl go, and then he's like, okay, I'll take you behind this convenient shipping container because we cannot afford another fight sequence and we don't want to block it and we're running out of light. Yeah. So he goes behind the shipping container and says, poof, biff, kapow. Mm. And then he comes out covered in blood, wiping himself down with his kerchief. And then Eric Roberts is like so shocked. Eric Roberts still has a gun, could shoot him right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is going on? Why didn't you do that?
And then Vivian says, he's the Blackbird, you fool. But if you look, she doesn't say anything. It's been ADR'd in.
Oh, amazing.
He's the Blackbird, you fool.
Oh god, this film is so good.
And then Nick arrives and then says, I didn't want to, you know, I wouldn't let you do it on your own. And then he says, you do realize you're gonna die. And then Flatley goes, shall we dance?
Oh,
way
best line in the film.
Lots of shooting, but we don't see what happens.
Well, we do, because they all start shooting at the same time at very close quarters, but you can see from the blocking, just as the drone camera goes off, that within seconds, Eric Roberts and his two guys are on the ground, and our heroes are not. So you're like, oh, okay, well, they just shot them then.
Yeah.
They were just quicker on the draw than professional henchmen. There's no
this
reason
like
why
they'd be... This is like a real Who Shot Mr. Pink situation.
So then we go back to the club, Mac the Knife again being sung, and Nick sat at the table with an arm in a sling, which is, you know, as Flatley knows, is movie language to say that he obviously came away slightly wounded.
Yeah, but there's no just falling down the stairs, I reckon.
He probably fell downstairs. But there's no Flatley, so we're meant to believe he's dead. I think
that's why Tyson Fury's wearing a black flak.
And presumably that guy's got a really long black tie on.
Really so long.
Sorry, so are we to believe at that point that Blackbird is dead?
Yeah, there's
I think that's the intimation.
A frisson.
Yeah. But and then we find that the buyers who got the POG, it's not the right one, but Patrick Bergen is given the right one. And then he says, "The world may never know what any of us do from the shadows."
It's truly astounding. Well, they will know when you've cured all disease, because as previously stated, the other thing that this POG does is it gives everyone eternal life. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably notice that when we literally don't have disease anymore. Huh? Like, imagine. And it's never mentioned even as it's an insane accidental thing that this plot means. That
It's a lovely bit of character development, though. He says to him before he before Blackbird hands over the POG, he says, "Oh, if what I think is on here isn't on here, I'm going to come for you." And he gives it to him anyway. So you know that basically Blackbird can't give up the life of spying. He can't resist it. So it's like it's a game to him. It's all a game. Mm.
Yeah, but he's in that game. That's the difference.
That's right. And you know what? He ain't playing by the rules, neither.
Oh, no. Yeah. He's thrown out the rule book.
Do you know what I did think was going to happen? I did think it was going to come up at the end. Blackbird will return.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
That would be lovely.
And I don't know what they would call that. You know, Blackburden, maybe, could be the one. We could repurpose that.
It would just be Blackbird, but like the A would be a 2.
The A. Two bird.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I at this point, like, everyone was screaming and cheering, and also we were still in the fresh flush of youth because it was only 75 minutes out of our day.
Yeah.
So that was itself exciting. And afterwards, like, I mean, I think it's okay to say this, there's no cops listening. I was quite extravagantly baked. And I talked more about that film afterwards, you know, that sort of beautiful moment of post-mortem with some pals after you've seen, I think more than any of the good films that I've ever seen. Like, we just could not get enough of Blackbird. We were just, it's really truly, like, as Sarah said, it is one of those movies where people will think that you're saying you should watch this and you've heard it a million times about some piece of crap and you watch it and it's just boring. This genuinely reaches some sort of outsider art that it's endlessly enjoyable to watch with people. It's endlessly enjoyable to show people. And I can't recommend it enough. I think Blackbird has to return. I wonder if the spell will be broken if he becomes wise to it, though. And that's assuming
like
he makes a
Wiseau,
full recovery. Yeah, because you don't want it to be like, oh, here's a, I know this is a campy movie. So, no.
It's one of the most sincere things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
There's a man holding you his beating heart in two hands. He's ripped from his chest and going, "What do you think? Could I be James Bond?
Shall we dance?
Shall we dance?"
We should say, for anyone listening who hasn't seen the film, we end with the beautiful image of Blackbird standing at the grave of his fiancée, who's dead.
The dead one from the beginning.
The dead one from the beginning. Yeah, and then a car draws up and out gets Vivian in the most ridiculous coat I've ever seen in my life.
She looks amazing.
I think
it's very Roger Moore era Bond girl. It's like a huge fluffy fur coat and a huge fluffy.
But it's a warm day. Well, it's for Ireland, isn't it? So it's probably not.
Yeah, it's actually probably not.
Yeah, and he gives a little smile with his jaunty hat, and there we go.
Oh, see, I choose to believe that there'll be another one.
Where's he got a house? Where else has he got a house? Because that's where they'll film it.
He's from Chicago, I think, isn't he? And he lives in, that house is in Cork. I think I read that the place in, I want to say the Bahamas, but I'm not sure. Maybe I'll be corrected. Or like some, you know, very beauteous sort of like seaside spot.
And he's Stoke.
Got property. And Stoke. He does.
Oh, he's a slum landlord. He's got a bunch of student accommodations.
Loads of apart hotels in Derby. Which he also, like all of those guys, he insists that he can come around anytime he likes. He says he's checking heating, but you know he's just snooping.
Well, I'm very pleased to have watched this. I really enjoyed it.
Did you?
Did
it live up to, because we've been saying a lot that it is genuinely good in a enjoyable way, not in a genuine good way. Did you find that, or was it maybe not quite as big a hit for you?
It just made me laugh. I think it's genuinely, I know they're so bad it's good gets bandied around. Most of the time they're not. But I think this one is a good laugh, and it's mercifully short as well.
Mm. I mean, I know we have said that a lot, but genuinely, there is something. Like, I remember when I was, first time I watched it, I just knew, because I was so excited, I knew to the minute when it was ending, because that's the kind of person I am. I'm like, oh my God, we're going to be done here by like fucking 8:25. Amazing. Anyway, so that showdown in like with the shipping containers in the beach, I was like, it's 8:21. This is I must have done the sums wrong. Oh no, maybe this is 2 hours long. No, 3 minutes later, movie is over.
Yeah,
it's just like
a man has said, let's dance, and that was enough.
Just wrap it up,
better
guys.
Better than any fight you can imagine.
Yeah,
well, luckily for everyone listening at home, we were also firing on all cylinders.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we have danced,
we've danced. The forbidden dance of the Blackbird.
John, as a Bond fan, did you like it as a you know, clearly a man who loves Bond?
It reminded me of like if a little kid did a home video of a Bond film.
Yeah,
it reminded me of that.
It has that energy,
or like in Rushmore, you know, where he does Scarface at the end, except he's doing a Bond film. Yeah.
Yeah, and we again have all mentioned Partridge, I think, at this stage, but it feels like a cutaway dream sequence you can imagine from Partridge, where he's fallen asleep and he's imagining himself in a Bond movie. This is pretty much beat for beat. There's very few scenes in this that you couldn't lift and just add 1 degree slightly more raised eyebrow, and in some cases less raised eyebrow, and it would work perfectly because it's so clearly a sort of male power fantasy writ large, which is what Bond is anyway, but with enough sort of festoonings of sort of like, you know, cinematic touches and editing and, you know, sort of MacGuffins and everything else, that you don't see it. You don't see the workings of it being this pretty pathetic male sort of escapist power fantasy. It's just that in its rawest form.
Well, yeah, because that's what you mentioned, the Partridge things. I was remembering in the teaser trailers for Alpha Papa, he gave loads of alternate titles, didn't he? Like Colossal Velocity and Hectic Danger Day. This could all be other titles of Blackbird. Yeah. Gunbird. Another one. And the Norfolk Fracture. But it just remains for me to say thank you very much for showing me the film, and well, no, you didn't literally show it to me, but you know, and for talking so eloquently about it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I'll speak for myself, and also for letting me know that we both got in touch with you the same
basic I love that
atomic instinct.
Yes,
which is wonderful, and that means we are now friends for life, Sarah.
Exactly. Oh, it's wonderful. We are the chieftains.
And I'm literally putting my head to the microphone just now, so you can.
Oh, same. I'm putting my scent on you like a cat.
To the end.
To the end. To the end, guys. John, thank you for having me. I love coming on your podcast, and to come on and do one of the best films ever made is genuine, you know, a thrill.
The pleasure is all mine.
Can I just alert you to one thing before you go? Because once you've watched this film, listener, you probably just want to just think about it for a long time. And I would like to draw your attention to michaelflatley.com. /art-gallery Michael Flatley's art is astonishing. He does it. He claims to be the only person who ever dances on a canvas.
And I've seen one of these in the flesh. They sell for hundreds of thousands of euro. There's one in the Royal Hibernian Club in the wall, on the wall of the Royal Hibernian Club in Dublin, which is quite a sort of august kind of private club. And I had some reason to be there about 4 or 5 years ago. And I looked at the wall and I said, is that a Michael Flatley painting? And they said, yes. And I said, oh my God, it's massive. And he just Jackson Pollocks himself around the canvas when it's on the floor and in different colored paints on his spats. And you they have to be seen to be believed, because it was Celtic Tiger madness that he was able to sell these things for ridiculous amounts of money. So do look them up and look at
they have beautiful
prices.
Names. They have very intense names like the Gouldian's Perch and the Flashback and Elvis Presley.
Amazing.
Oscar Wilde. Oh, Pretty One. Mozart. They've got amazing names and they are genuinely quite good art. If you know, it's just a man dancing on a piece of canvas. And then my favourite one is the one, the very first one on the page, which is called The Walking Dead, and is a series of blues. And it just says underneath, gifted to the people of Ireland.
Beautiful.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Well, I can't think of a more beautiful sentiment in which to end this adventure. But hopefully Blackbird will return and hopefully we'll be with him. But until next time, pleasure. I'll just say au revoir.
Au revoir. To the end.
To the end.
Pack up all my cares and woe. Here I go, singing low. Bye, bye, Blackbird. Where somebody waits for me. Sugar is sweet, so is she. Bye, bye, Blackbird. No one here can love and understand me. Oh, what hard luck stories they all hand me. Make my bed and light the light. She, bye, 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 Blackbird. I said, no one here can love and understand me. Oh, what hard luck stories they all hand me. So make my bed and light the light. I'll arrive late tonight, Blackbird.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.